This is Radio Entrepreneurs and the Conscious Business Show. We're at the Boston Security Analyst Society location. They're sponsoring us here today, as well as our other sponsor, Global X, that has recently launched the Conscious Capitalism ETF. But we're very excited today. We have Michael Grease from Riverbend Advisors and Principal. And he's actually brings 30 years of professional experience in business development, relationships, sales, management, and his work currently with the Boston Security Analyst Society in their upcoming Impact Investing Conference, which is November 17th here in Boston, but also his work as principal with Riverbend Advisors. So thank you, Michael, for being here with us. A pleasure as always.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
You've got a couple of different venues going on. As I mentioned, the conference.
And you're forgetting me again.
And Peter, oh my goodness.
I'm gonna yell at you.
Peter Meyerson, he's gonna clobber me. I'm so sorry. Welcome as our co-host. Yes. From Cohen, Resnick, Meyerson, and Plout. So thank you for being here with us today.
Very good.
It's been one of those days. I know. I'll get it by the last time we finish the interviews. But
well, you got my name right, and that's all I care about. And Michael, how do you pronounce your last name?
Grease. It's the German way.
All right. Wonderful. We got all that cleared up. Wonderful. Okay. Well, Michael, welcome. Peter, glad you're here side by side here to armor through the conversation.
It's great to be here, Darby.
Really.
It's so much fun.
It is.
Playing around with you.
It is. But so, Michael, you've got kind of two hats that you wear. I mean, you've been instrumental in launching this incredible conference that is with the Boston Security Association on impact investing, and also your work with Riverbend Advisors. So talk to us a little bit about both and how you journeyed into these pathways for your life.
Well, let me start with the conference, because that is coming up. It's our fourth annual Sustainable Investing Conference, and this is my passion, is promoting and mainstreaming of sustainable investing. So that's kind of what my work is geared toward, how I got into the conference itself. I mean, I spent 20 years at IBM doing business development, a lot of technology, high-end technology sales, and very rapidly gained an interest both in finance and in how corporations work. IBM, when I joined it, was very focused on being a corporation that was, it was family friendly, it was work friendly. It had a lot of things that changed over the years, but it really resonated with me that a corporation, a business corporation, is not just about profits, it's about its entire ecosystem. We call it stakeholders today,
right,
but it's about its employees,
right,
and its customers and the places where it does business. And so I kind of journeyed through the interest in finance, got a master's in finance at Boston College, and did some work on economic development and found myself more and more interested in this area. And so I got very active with the Security Analyst Society. It is an incredible professional organization, supports 5,500 members here in the Boston area, and the CFA Institute, of course, worldwide is, you know, hundreds of thousands of chartered financial analysts. So it's a focus very much on the ethics of the profession,
right,
and that's what attracted me to it, that it believes that, you know, security analysis, investment management is a profession, which means you have your responsibility first and foremost to your clients and to the profession. It's not a sales transaction where, you know, you and I have to watch out for ourselves.
Right.
I'm supposed to be watching out for you. That's the whole fiduciary thing. So that's kind of what got me there. And I was co-chairing one of our groups that does programs, and we had a meeting with the different chairs, people from fixed income and personal wealth and the quants and, you know, everyone, and they all said, you know, I'm hearing more about this stuff.
Hmm.
You know, I know you're interested. Maybe we should do something more than the typical lunch program. And I said, well, you came to the right place. I'm in.
Sign me up.
I asked them each to come up with a volunteer from the group. We put together the first conference, and we said, we've never done anything like this. We'll do a half day. We spent about an hour at our first meeting and said, okay, we got to do a full day because there's way too much to talk about.
Yep.
And we said, well, first year, we can get 50 people to come to this. That'd be great. And we had over 60. We filled the venue. It was a terrific event. It got a lot of compliments, too, in that we were not just attracting people who were already interested. We were mm-hmm. getting people from the mainstream, and that was our goal.
That's great.
And so it's grown. Last year, we were about 150. You know, we hope to have about the same this year. While I love growth, I think that at this size, it's still an interactive venue. I'm sure you've noticed, go to big conferences, that when it gets past a certain size, everyone gets very passive.
Right.
And I don't want that. I want people to feel like they can engage, and that's what we've been able to do.
Yeah. Well, especially because, as you said early on, you're getting people that this may be new to, mm-hmm. as well as those that have been in it. So you want that sharing. You want that education so that we bring more to the table and get more of a movement behind all this. So that's fantastic.
What do you think drives people who haven't been interested to coming to this kind of event?
Well, in recent years, it's been clients to some degree. I would say 4 or 5 years ago, when I would talk to people I know who did work with individual clients, I'd say, my clients aren't interested in that, or no, they just want me to make money, and they wouldn't get it.
It's all about making money.
It's all about
making
money. Yeah. Now, I would like to say, before you can make money, you have to not lose it, which is one of the things we talk about in sustainable investing.
Well, it's always an issue.
Reducing risk. That's changed. Their clients are starting to ask about it. So that's changed. And as you see larger and larger institutions, certainly large asset owners, pension funds, it's certainly started much more in Europe than here, looking at the fundamental question, which is that I'm investing for the long term, and almost all of us are, right? I mean, there are short-term traders, and that's part of the market, mm-hmm. but almost all of us are investing for the long term, retirement, our kids, an endowment, a foundation, pensions. And the first question you ask yourself, it's kind of the 10-second elevator speech, is the world and the economy and the industry going to be around? Are the resources going to be there in 20 years? Because if they're not there, your company is not going to make money, right. and you're going to lose money.
Right.
So that's how I say it to people first. And I think throughout the industry, people are catching on to that. The numbers and clearly the research has shown that there is, you can reduce risk. That's very clear. Gone are the days when people thought, it means you're not investing in X, therefore you can't make as much money. That's, at least in the industry, that's now long gone. Now, a lot of people still haven't heard that and need to appreciate the full range of what this topic, which is why I call it sustainable investing, does, but the industry has. And so now more and more people, and as you see, the largest institutions are all doing something or talking about it or making investments in it. And that's a good thing.
Right. I mean, the term sustainability, transcends so many different sectors, not only in the investment mm-hmm. side, obviously, which we'll talk about here in a minute, but also, manufacturing, telecommunications, pharma. You look at any mm-hmm. kind of area, that term is coming on the table. It's a branded term. It's a way to differentiate. But I think beyond that, and coming as a marketing strategist, people say, well, that's marketing jargon. That's all, But there's a part of it. But the other part is it's actually business leaders are becoming more conscious to how do I do this? How do I instill this thinking in my organization? And you mentioned, Michael, early on in the dialogue, the elements of conscious capitalism and how you were drawn to that even after your years at IBM. And so you felt as that human experience for you had to change. Talk to us a little bit about what you've developed with Riverbend Advisors and some of the elements of conscious capitalism and how they potentially intersect, and you bring that to your clients and the work that you do.
So my work has been, and doing conferences like this and working to reach out to clients, both folks who are focused on this space in the sustainable investment mm-hmm. in some way, and then hoping to work with some of the larger firms as they're catching on. When you spend 20 years at a very large corporation, you know how to get things done without any formal authority when an organization is trying to change. And so early on, it's been hard, but increasingly people are more receptive. So my focus is on the mainstreaming, looking for projects or an opportunity to work with firms who are trying to make this work, mm-hmm. Or firms who are doing this already and are thinking about now, how do we grow this business as more people become aware of it?
Right.
So that's kind of the focus. But the conscious capitalism part, one way to portray it to people who think about capital and investment is we know how to measure financial investment and financial capital. The monks taught us double entry accounting. We do that. We've done it hundreds of years. Mm. We aren't so good at measuring environmental capital. And I don't mean just, are the trees healthy, but water, air, the scarce resources, the climate. That is a form of capital that we depend upon to make our economy run. Human and social capital, mm-hmm. Human capital being the workforce, the clients, the environment you're in. Social capital is the social capital to make organizations run.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can go to people who aren't even thinking about this and they'll talk about the importance of culture in an organization.
Right.
That's social capital.
Yep.
So, that's why as companies start to think about different elements of this, some come to it through reducing waste. Because mm-hmm. after all, if I buy something and I throw it away, I have wasted money. Right? If that's the only reason I do it, it's a start. So some companies have come to that. Other companies have realized their clients care. And then companies have realized that when they do something wrong, when something bad happens, environmental, social, or governance, they pay a huge price. And we've seen that. And companies realize that's not really good for our business.
No, it's true. And in fact, you know, early on, you know, we talked about value creation. We've been expressing that through each of our dialogues because there seems to be a disconnect. You know, company CEOs and management teams are moving in the direction of conscious capitalism, being mindful, or that shared value component. But then how do we get Wall Street? How do we get, you know, again, where we are today, the Boston Security, you know, Analyst Society, having them focus on this to say to a CEO, okay, there is a long-term view. It's not always short-term. And then what are you doing to protect from an ESG, environmental social governance perspective? Or how are you thinking about sustainability? And you must go through this a lot, you know, with your clients and discussions, but there's a connectivity back to that value side. So how do we create that value creation, if you will, that instills that the businesses feel good about the track that they're on and can promote that more, and then also see the reaping benefits in terms of investor action, Wall Street action?
And that's been probably the number one challenge. So if I look at this year's event, for instance, and I'll start from the back of the event moving forward, we have some folks, Tim Humans, who's working with the Strategic Investor Initiative of CECP, which was originally the Council for Effective Corporate Philanthropy.
Yeah.
That's a group of CEOs. And they have this initiative is the CEOs want to promote a more long-term view and help them get the kind of investors that are going to support what they do.
Okay.
Steve Leidenberg, who is 35, 40 years in this field, he has a project called the Infrastructure Investment Project, looking at the larger systems, not just, you know, individual systems, but the global systems that we depend upon. The last, the closing keynote of the day is going to be Sarah Williamson. Now, Sarah, as a 20-plus year veteran of Wellington, in Wellington Management, she recently retired and took on the leadership of a new not-for-profit, although they've been around for a few years as an initiative, called Focusing Capital on the Long Term. And that's something that came out of work that was done by McKinsey and by the Canadian Pension Fund, the CPPIB, Canadian Public Pension Investment Board. And it was an argument, it was an article in the Harvard Business Review in early 2014, essentially making the argument that we must focus more on the long term.
Okay.
That's a huge thing. And to me, sustainable investment is just, it's basically an exemplar of that long-term thinking.
Okay.
So they've been working on that for 2 years, and that's now been turned into a not-for-profit to help promote that. So it has not just McKinsey and CPPIB, but Dow Chemical, Tata Brothers, and BlackRock behind it. So that's going to, that part of what we're talking about is going to end our day.
Yep.
Thinking a little bit more about the investment folks, George Serafim is a professor at Harvard Business School, and Sister Pat Daly, who's been doing engagement for 30 plus years, as she jokes, people think of me as the climate change nun, we're going to have a good dialogue.
You mean the
on,
thing that was not talked about in the debates?
Yeah.
Yes, the thing
go.
That was not talked about in the debates. Exactly. George has done some really interesting work, and he has a recent working paper out that captures the fact that when you look at engagement, a lot of people think engagement is soft. Oh, it's people running around trying to get companies to do stuff. That actually the organizations that engage on issues of material issues to corporations are actually effective, and it affects the value and the stock price of those companies.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to have a discussion not only about that, but what are the challenges to effective engagement? What does it mean? How does it work? And that's part of getting increasingly getting investment firms to realize that. I say to people, you know, your firm may not be doing engagement. A lot of firms are working with corporations, whether it's on governance and, you know, stockholder propositions or having conversations. But it doesn't really matter if your firm isn't, because others are, and it's effect. Those are your investments.
Right.
They're infecting you. So you need to be aware of what people are doing. And I think that message is, you know, it's getting across.
And we actually, earlier, we spoke with Mary Adams on smarter companies and integrated reporting, and all of this really speaks to the same platform. It's looking at the tangibles, the intangibles, but you mentioned all the different types of capital that can be defined today and is defined today, and that's a different perspective than where organizations were before. Can you share some stories of impact in terms of where you've been working with different clients and where you've seen people either embracing some ideas, maybe you've had to educate and coach them through it, where they changed their mindset, they were able to make an impact, and basically go down the road that you've described in terms of sustainability and thinking sustainably.
I'll think of some folks in one space who work in the, you know, work with individual investors. And some of this is just conversations. It's not, unfortunately, a business. I didn't make money doing it, but I work with them, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, who came and said, you know, I think this is important, but I can't quite get the rest of my firm or others to think about it. And right. So, you know, I take them back through kind of the investment side of it, the idea of risk reduction and what that really means. You know, one of the things I think about, especially for people who are analysts, we're all very fond of discounted cash flow. It's the core of our profession. Well, if you think about a discounted cash flow, where is the bulk of the value in that discounted cash flow? It is in the future. It's not in year one, two, or three.
Right, right.
So just think about it that way if it helps.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
you
no,
need to
point.
Think about, because your interpretation, your view of the worth of this investment is based on a lot of stuff that are going to happen 3, 5, and 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
you need to be thinking, not necessarily about, you can't predict that for it, but are they doing the right things that would get them there?
Right, right.
And to some degree, and when you talk to people on the in the institutional side too, it's also a proxy for good management.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we all know best intentions, right? I mean, you can have a plan for what you're doing today, but tomorrow will look very different.
Right.
And so when I invest in a company, it's like venture capitalists. They don't invest in the business idea. They invest in the people.
Yeah.
And very much, I want to know, is the corporate management, are they thinking about these things?
Right.
And how are, you know, they can't predict what's going to happen or how they're going to respond, but seeing what they're thinking about and what they're planning for gives you some confidence that, you know, whatever happens, these folks, you know, they'll be able to adapt.
Right.
And that's
right.
That's something I think that resonates with the larger institutions as
right.
well.
And I think we've heard that too, even with the Conscious Capitalism ETF and some of the leadership discussions we've had today. It's the human element side, mm-hmm. right? So it is that individual and their beliefs and how that transcends across an organization, but cementing it with good business steps mm-hmm. in terms of, okay,
exactly.
how am I making the right decisions for the stakeholders that are involved?
You know, I mean, it's clear you have a passion for all this stuff, but I'm just sort of curious about what your business is. I mean, is your business, and maybe I've missed it, and I'm, you know, being dense as I've occasionally been accused of, but is your business going and helping these companies figure out what the sustainable investment goals for them is?
I think it depends, and I'm making progress, I think, in the years, because frankly, early on, you know, it was hard to get people to even talk about it, let alone
sure.
think of investing.
Oh, yeah,
in it.
Of course.
And you know, that's an ongoing, you know, that's a kind of business development, as it were. But I look at any firm that is thinking about this, and you can ask some questions about, so how do you move there? Is it about being able to articulate to your clients? Is it about developing products and offerings?
Mm-hmm.
Is it about the culture in the firm? Is it about thinking about a very successful business in this space, and how does it grow and continue to thrive?
Mm-hmm.
Now, continuing to thrive, as you know from Conscious Capitalism, doesn't mean we have to grow forever.
Right.
But, you know,
right.
you do have to think about the fact that as other people, as there are more clients interested in this and larger players come in, you don't want to get swamped.
Mm-hmm.
And you have something to offer.
Right.
So that's kind of been the business I've been working to develop. Mm-hmm. It's a slow process, but I believe in this, so I'm willing to do this. And to see it, I hope to see it grow. And perhaps at some point, as some firms are really clicking on, maybe even join a firm that's doing this in a serious way. That would be terrific. Because I spend so much time working inside firms, and I like doing that.
Yeah.
I don't like working on my own. I mean, everywhere I go, I'm building teams to do things.
Right.
Mostly volunteer
right.
teams in some places, but that's the way. It's fun. That's the way you get things done.
That's part of your nature. Right.
That's part of
right.
my nature.
No,
yeah.
absolutely. Well, and you've talked about the conference. You've talked about, obviously, you know, Riverbed Advisors. And obviously, as Peter said, you're passionate and it comes through. And if people want to contact you on either one of those initiatives, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Easiest is to, I'm MJG at riverbendadvisors.com. I have a website. There's some, you know, I don't put a lot there, but there's some things there. I'm delighted to talk to folks who are interested in promoting this within their firms, within the industry, working with clients. I've also been contacted by a lot of other CFA societies, and there is great interest. So other societies would like to do things like this. And the Institute as a whole is taking it really very seriously at this point, and I've been involved with some of the conversations as this becomes part of the curriculum. It's already, there is some ESG material in level one of the curriculum, and they're working to add it. The challenge there, of course, with 9,000 pages of curriculum is how you do that. But I think the message that's come across that I certainly sent, and I think they heard as they went to the firms and people, is this isn't an add-on. This is right. Really, you incorporate into what you're already doing.
That's right.
And I hope that makes it easier for that to be part of the, you know, the growth of financial analysts and investment managers going forward.
Yes, absolutely.
That's great. Do you want to give a phone number or?
Sure, 781-559-4623.
Okay.
Is my, again, to reach me. And as I said, it's mjg@riverbendadvisors.com. And I am interested in all aspects of the space. I mean, I've had people approach me about things that are not directly related, but are part of the space, and you know,
we
can find other ways to connect in. And I'm very active with the New England Clean Energy Council because I've done some work in the renewable energy space. And you know, part of the few things I've done in the last year have been to try to bring those worlds together: mm-hmm. the investment world, you know, the clean technology world, and the venture world, because there's some interactions that we want to promote among the different industries.
Right, right.
We spend too much time talking to ourselves.
Well, that's true. That's true. We got to get it out. We got to get out to the capital markets and get more momentum. So that's
absolutely
wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being with us here today. Appreciate
it.
Yep. Thank you for having me. It's terrific, and wish you good luck. This is a great series.
So wonderful. Well, we're glad you could be here with us. This is a Radio Entrepreneurs Conscious Business Show. We'll be back after a few commercials, and thank you, Peter, for being here as a co-host this afternoon.
Fun
as always.
I wouldn't miss it, Darby.